Beginning to sound like a crack record here, but also in that issue is a piece by Peter Singer, who is professor of bioethics at the
University Centre for Human Values.
Yeah, but you've got this. There's a second place. You also have an Australian place.
I'm also at the University of Melbourne at the Centre for Applied Philosophy
now,
and Public Ethics.
And the books, of course, range from the wonderful life-changing book Animal Liberation some time ago to the latest one, which is called The Life You Can Save. And on the back it says, Peter Singer has been called the most influential living philosopher by The New Yorker and named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine. So I'm sorry, but you have to go and live that down, so...
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation to be here, and it's thank you whoever turned the lights up a little bit, so it's really much nicer to see who you're speaking to. Sorry for the other speakers who didn't get that. We are having a debate about whether science can tell us right from wrong. It's an old debate. In fact, if we go back to the publication of Charles Darwin's classic, The Origin of Species, one of the first reviews said that if Mr. Darwin is right about the theory of evolution, he's proved that might is right. Well, of course, Darwin, receiving that review, said that this is nonsense. He had claimed to have proved no such thing. He was very wise in saying that what he was doing was a matter of science, not a matter of ethics. Although that doesn't mean that it didn't tell us some important things about ethics, and I'll come to that in a moment. But that example has gone on many occasions. In the 1970s, E.O. Wilson, Harvard University, published a book called Sociobiology, The New Synthesis, which applied what we now call evolutionary psychology to human beings, very controversial, provocative thing to do, and again told us a lot about the evolutionary significance of social behavior. But in the last chapter of that book, he applied that to human beings, which is fine, I think absolutely right, of course, that we are animals, we are evolved, and our social behavior is also something that has evolved. But he made some claims about morality that were a little reminiscent of what Sam Harris said earlier. He said that the day will come when we have so understood the hypothalamic limbic systems that we can find the premises of morality and deduce a knowledge of right and wrong from that understanding. Now, I think that was a mistake to believe that any kind of scientific knowledge of that sort would actually provide us with moral premises. And I put the emphasis on the word premises because science certainly does provide us with information that is extremely important for us in working out what is right and what is wrong. But I don't believe that it can provide us with the premises, with the basic values that we have to work from. And I think that's important. Let me just go back a little bit before I explain that. Well, what does science tell us about the origins of morality, what morality is? Because, of course, that's really what Darwin, to some extent, not so much in The Origin of Species, but in The Descent of Man and in other works, and also E.O. Wilson, were trying to say. We've now understood morality. Science has given us an explanation of where morality comes from. And I think that's true to a significant extent, that we understand, for instance, that morality evolved, that it evolved in other social animals, in particular in the social mammals, and that it's a mistake to think of morality as something that is only observable in human beings. We, as we get to animals that are more like us, that not only are social mammals, but have good memories, have recognition of each other, live in small groups where they recognize each other, we see behavior that is much closer to our own in terms of following moral rules. So, for example, we see ideas of reciprocity in chimpanzees. Franz de Waal, who's observed chimpanzees for much of his life, tells stories where he observes that if one chimpanzee does a favor to another, and then similar circumstances arise, but the positions are reversed, and the other chimpanzee, the one that was done the favor, does not reciprocate, the chimpanzee who was expecting the other one to reciprocate gets angry, may attack the one that failed to reciprocate. So a basic idea of justice that we have, that is, that if you do a favor for me, I should do one for you, that idea of reciprocity, is present in non-human animals. So we understand that as something that has evolved, along with a number of other things, including, of course, caring behavior for our kin. But we are also beings who have evolved capacities to reason that go beyond those of chimpanzees and capacity to use language that goes beyond those of any other species that we're aware of. And that means that we start to think about our behavior in ways that I don't believe any other species that we know of, on this planet anyway, does think and reflect about our behavior. And because of that, although science can tell us where morality has come from, that doesn't tell us what we ought to do. In fact, sometimes it actually tells us that the instinctive behavior that is evolved might not be the best kind of behavior for us to have in the particular circumstances in which we live. So, for example, we've evolved the idea of caring for those close to us, our kin and those we love and those we grew up with. We don't have the same response to caring about those far away who we don't see. And that's a serious problem in the world, because we may know at an intellectual level that there are people who need our assistance elsewhere in the world who are living in great poverty. And while I agree with Pat Churchland that not all aid always is effective and does what we want it to do, we can learn from mistakes, and we certainly can, and I believe we ought to help people far away, even if we don't have the evolved response that leads us to care for them in the way we care for people close to us. So I think we make mistakes in that way, in that we donate. Americans generally are quite charitable. We give quite a high percentage of what we earn by world standards, roughly 2%. To charity, but I think a lot of it is far less effective than it could be because we give it to other Americans. And we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And even if you are poor, and we do of course have poor in America, if you are poor, let's say you're earning less than $20,000 a year for a family of four, puts you below the poverty line, it takes tens of thousands of dollars to make a difference to how well off you are. Whereas we know that in the world, over 1 billion people are living on less than $1.25 US per day. So we're talking about $500 a year. And we know that we can make a huge difference to their lives. And for example, save the lives of children who are currently dying at a rate of something like 9 million children a year, children under five die every year, from avoidable poverty-related diseases like measles or diarrhea or pneumonia. And yet we don't give more than a tiny fraction of the money we give to charity to the people who need it most and where our dollars could be most effective. And that, I think, is a moral failing, but one that is explicable in evolutionary terms, but not one that we want to follow. We want to understand our behavior and try to change it for the better, rather than simply say, well, morality is something that's evolved and somehow, therefore, we're stuck with it. So that's an example of the need to reflect and think. Now, so far, you might say, well, that's exactly what Sam Harris was saying, really, wasn't it? That we should be concerned about the well-being of everyone, and not only humans, but non-human animals as well, if they can suffer, if they can enjoy their lives. That's important too, and we ought to be concerned about that as well, and I certainly think that that's true too. Isn't that what Sam Harris was saying? Well, yes, he was, and I agree with him to a very large extent in terms of what we ought to do in terms of the substance of how we ought to live. I agree we ought to be concerned to improve the welfare of every being that is conscious, that has a welfare, whose life can go well or badly. But I don't agree that science can tell us right from wrong. I don't really think that science tells us that. I think it's a big story, but I think we can see that there are reasons that the fact that a being is suffering gives us a reason to do something about that suffering, not something that science itself tells us. But more importantly, I think there's a lot of other questions that are ethical questions that science also doesn't really tell us about. For instance, Sam Harris mentioned the possibility that we might discover things about changing our genome so that we can live for 1,000 years. Suppose that we do discover that, but we still live on a world with finite resources that can't give a good life to more than, let's just say, 10 billion people. And let's say that by the time we've discovered this, there are 10 billion people on the planet. And let's say that although we've discovered how we can live for 1,000 years, the quality of our life starts to drop off after the first 100. And just isn't as good for the remaining 900 as it was for the first 100. Not implausible. Then there's an ethical question. Should we extend life for 1,000 years? Because don't forget, we can only have 10 billion people on the planet. And if each of them live for 1,000 years, obviously fewer can exist. Whereas if we voluntarily said, no, this is not a scientific development we want, then we could have more people coming into existence living that great first 100 years and then dying after 100 years. I don't see how science can tell us whether it's better to have, over time, more people alive who will live a very high quality life for 100 years, or fewer people who will live a less good life, but still a good life, but just less high quality life for 1,000 years. I think that that's a question that we have to reflect on, and if there is an answer, we have to find it. And that's not, although that's a science fiction example, there are many other cases that we can think of, and I agree with Pat Churchland that there are things that science doesn't tell us. One of them, again, relates to one of Sam Harris's examples that is a really practical problem. He said, well, medicine has a definition of health, good health. We don't really get doctors to argue about that. But in a way, we do. We do have questions about, do we want to extend life for somebody who is, let's say, 80 and developing dementia, and we could extend their life by more years, but should we? Now, you might say, well, that depends on what their wishes were. Perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't. These are things we can disagree about, and they're things we should discuss, and I don't believe they're things in which science can give us the right or wrong answer. Although, as I say, in many cases, it can give us information which will lead us to better implement the values that we have and on which we agree. Thank you very much.